Hey, I'm Scott. What's happening? Welcome to the show. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Jim Loeb's going to be on, man. I told you, it's a done deal. It's a done deal. But it could still be undone. And, well, dear leader, your boss and mine, Prime Minister Netanyahu, has declared that he's not done doing everything he can to try to ruin the Iran nuclear deal, even after now it's clear that they will not. The Republicans and the Israeli Fifth Column and the Democratic Party will not be able to override the president's veto of their anti-Iran nuclear deal resolution. So does Netanyahu say, all right, fine. You know, it's America. They're our greatest ally, and they're the greatest and oldest democracy in the world right now, and we got to respect their process, and we did what we can, but fair's fair in a democracy. The other guys won, and so we'll just hope to get the best deal that we can out of it. And no, oh, hell no. He's going to do everything he can to get the Republicans and the Democrats to do anything else they can to push the Iranians right out of the deal. If that's what they can do. They're going to try. Jim Loeb from Interpress Service and LoebLog.com is going to be on the show to talk about that. Oh, yeah. And then, I want to get Trevor Tim. I'm not sure if that's going to work at all, but he wrote a great thing. And I like Trevor, man. Let's see if I can talk with him about that. And Scott Brown is going to be here. I don't know. I guess you could call it an infomercial. But I don't mind. He's my new sponsor on the show, Master Samurai Tech. And what it is it's online courses for doing, appliance repair, big-ticket appliance repair. So fancy, expensive, new front-end loader, washer, dryers, and dishwashers and these things that nowadays the regular old refrigerator repairman doesn't have the skills anymore. You need software skills, etc., to be able to do this stuff. And it's good work, good money. You own your own business. They'll teach you not just how to work on this stuff, but actually how to make your own business out of it, too. And seems like a really great deal. In fact, I might just take the classes myself and go and see if I can make some money. I do have adult responsibilities and everything. But anyway, but I prefer to do this. But in order to keep doing this, I'm going to need you guys to take the Master Samurai Tech classes and become appliance repair entrepreneurs so that he'll keep sponsoring my show so that I can keep doing show. See, that's what it's about. It's capitalism, see? It's just a series of mutually beneficial exchanges going on here, guys. That's what it is. Master Samurai Tech.com. And, Scott Brown, he's gonna be on to talk all about it. He's a cool guy, man. I had a good talk with him before. And, that's a cool sponsor to have, don't you think, man? I like it. And by the way, if you want to sponsor the show, I encourage you to sponsor the show. My email is scott@scotthorton.org, and I'm cheap and pretty flexible on prices, really. If you want to haggle with me, I'll haggle. And, man. Best deal in town, probably. scott@scotthorton.org. If you own a business or you're part of a nonprofit type group, you want to help support the show, let me know. scott@scotthorton.org. I just got a tweet like this. So I'll go ahead and answer this out loud here, too. Yes, I give speeches. scott@scotthorton.org. I will come and talk to your group. The more you pay me, the better. But I'll pretty much come for any price. All right, cool. And you know what? Speaking of business, check this out. Derek Sheriff is a libertarian. And Derek Sheriff owns listenandthinkaudio.com. Why does he own it? Because he created it. And why did he create it? Because he wants to spread libertarianism to the world. He's one of them wacky evangelical types like myself. And he's also an audiobook guy. And he says, I want to put libertarianism on audiobook. So he's a man on a mission, dude, like the Blues Brothers. Also white. And what he's doing here is he's basically finding every important libertarian title that he can find that doesn't already have an audiobook to it, and he's trying to get an audiobook to it. And here's what he's offering. This came up in the fund drive over the summer, and he figured out a way that he can keep doing this. So, anyone who donates $200 or more to this show will get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Audio. And that means all of the audiobooks they've already done, which I believe is approximately a score or so, a couple of dozen, maybe a little bit more than that, and all the audiobooks they ever do. And yes, that will include Fascism versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell, narrated by myself. Get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Audio, audiobooks, libertarian audiobooks, if you donate $200 or more to this show. And, of course, still, if you donate $100, you get a QR code commodity disc. You can get Charles Goyette's book, Red, Blue, and Broke All Over, or Sheldon Richman's book, Your Money or Your Life Against the Income Tax, or the audiobook of Fascism versus Capitalism. And the QR code commodity disc, look them up at commoditydiscs.com. That is the greatest currency ever invented. A 1 ounce silver piece with a QR code on the back. So you scan it, tells you how much it's worth right now. No face value, just subjective value on the market. Instantaneous. Isn't that great? So, yeah, there you go. But the Derek Sheriff deal, man. Big thank you to Derek Sheriff for being so generous and offering that. I think that's a pretty great gimme to get as a kickback for a donation, don't you think? A lifetime subscription to libertarian audiobooks? Oh, yeah. So check out scotthorton.org/donate for more information on that. All right, cool, man. Oh, good. I'm almost out of time for this segment, so it's a perfect time to bring up Rand Paul. Did you see the pictures of Rand Paul in New Hampshire and the talks that he's given there? Oh, man. I mean, perfectly deserved. One of these pictures I tweeted out. Someone sent it to me yesterday. I tweeted out. He's sitting there talking to, I think, 12 people, maybe 24 people, and they're all over 60. And they're all standing there with their arms crossed, like they don't care what he's saying anyway. They're not even listening to him anyway. You know, they're all like standing on one leg, very impatient. While he tells them some crap. And then the other one I saw was actually footage from a local TV news station covering it. And he was in a diner or something, and I guess there were probably 50 or maybe 60 people in there to see him. And including some younger people, but, man. And this was in Manchester, New Hampshire. This is, isn't that ground zero? I mean, other than Keene, isn't Manchester ground zero for the Free State Project? Isn't this, you know, by design, the most libertarian state in the union right now? And they don't give a damn about Rand Paul. And so, note to mainstream media people listening, that's because libertarians don't give a damn about Rand Paul, because he's not a libertarian. Ask him, he'll tell you. That's a word that they try to hang around his neck like an albatross to hurt him. And that's fine, because he's a name that people like to try to hang around our, us libertarians' necks like an albatross. And so the contempt is mutual. And that's why no one's showing up at his crappy little, I mean, seriously, man. The son of Ron Paul, the guy who sold out thousands, 3,000, 4,000 at Liberty University and Berkeley University back to back in 2012. Rand Paul shows up to a dozen retirees talking about, give me my Medicaid money. He said, okay.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support The Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our statist enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. Man, it's kind of dark in here. That's all right. If I turn on the light, then the ceiling fan might come on too, and that'll make a bunch of noise. I'll just wait. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Hey, last night was the first episode of The Future of Freedom, hosted by me with our guest, Jacob Hornberger. You might want to check it out. He's the founder and the president of the Future Freedom Foundation, and so this is now my second show on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Tucker. We're more kind of co-hosts there, more of just kind of a discussion. Here on the Future Freedom, I'm trying to make it more about Jacob and his writings, because he's very prolific. He writes, three, four or five times a week or something like that, and on everything, and has for 30 years in a row, this kind of deal. So, yeah, man. So last night we talked about minarchism versus anarchism, and we talked about immigration, and we were going to talk about guns, but we ran out of time to talk about guns. But he's great, man. Hornberger's great. So I think you'll like it. Check it out at liberty.me. It's on YouTube. The Future of Freedom with me, Scott Horton, and Jacob Hornberger, the founder and the president of the Future Freedom Foundation. Okay. Let's see. Said that. One more thing I want to say about Rand. I'm sorry. Rand was quoted yesterday or a couple days ago or something. I'm trying not to pay too much attention, but I did see this headline on the Twitter come by, and so I clicked it. And he was saying to somebody about how Dick Cheney's wrong about everything and always has been. Well, Dick Cheney's got a new book out. Dick and Liz Cheney, their book is, you know, America, the unapologetic, the exceptional, the Republican at war. And clearly their agenda is to get the entire Republican Party, you know, every single candidate running for president right now, to use it as the basis for their entire program. Neoconservative enabled right wing nationalism. And, so Rand Paul said something that I really like. And I try to give this guy credit every chance I get, if only because I just love his dad. And I know he knows better. That's why. So anyway, so he says, yeah, man, Dick Cheney's terrible, man. Dick Cheney has been wrong about everything. But then he barely backs it up at all. You go look at the article. I lost it here, but it's at the Huffington Post. And he doesn't go on to say, and here's what I mean, and tell a story about what it is that Dick Cheney did. He doesn't argue. It's implicit that he's saying that they shouldn't have invaded Iraq in 03. Okay, but if you're going to say that, then stop being coy, goddammit, and just argue. Just make the point. You know, I saw a quote from one of his rallies last week. Well, if you want, or 2 weeks ago, if you want a president who's going to go to war as his first response, then there are other candidates to vote for. What? I mean, what is he even saying there? I'm a little bit less likely to have a war, so don't vote for me, because I know you're all a bunch of warmongers. Yeah, that's a really great line, Rand. You know, that absolutely kicks Just Come Home's ass. Just Come Home? Why, that makes perfect sense. Seems to work just fine for Switzerland. Well, that's pretty easy. I can say that in half a sentence. No, I'm radical Islam and Iranian threat and secret side deals with the IAEA and... In what way is Rand better than Dick Cheney? On Iran. On the Islamic State. On Ukraine. He, in the past, has been better on Libya and Syria, and you know he's just kicking himself over it daily now. How could I have been so stupid? But to be good on anything for even a minute, how am I ever going to live it down? I just can't. If only my last name wasn't Paul. If only my last name was Cheney. Then they'd like me. Bad humbug. Contemptible. Just... It's just like they used to say about me back in the 2000s. Well, you just hate Bush. Well, yeah, of course I do. Haven't you been paying attention to all the things that he's done? You know? Like, oh no, what happened was, I just hate that word, Bush. And when I found out that someone was named that, I decided to just hate them forever. That was my reasoning. I hadn't come up with any actual things that he did that I disapprove of. No, I just hate Bush. Same kind of thing with Rand here, I guess. Even when he's attacking Dick Cheney, he fails pathetically. Makes no case whatsoever. Makes no case how he's different. Doesn't have a plausible one to make. Well, now I agree with Dick Cheney on the Iran nuclear deal, and I agree with Dick Cheney on bombing the Islamic State, although, maybe I don't want quite as many ground troops as him, but who's going to pick the targets for the planes, Rand? The Kurds, oh, he wants to promise the Kurds a state of their own. I wonder if he ran that by the Cheneys. Hey, Dick, now that you broke Iraq into three, should we promise the Kurds a state of their own and guarantee a war with our NATO allies, the Turks, and our mutually agreed enemies, the Iranians, and for that matter, the Iraqis in Shiite-controlled Baghdad? Yeah. Okay, anyway. Oh, and then here's a funny thing. Ben Carson. Now, I don't know much about this guy, except that he's some ridiculous Republican warmonger idiot, so who cares, right? Well, he's doing really well in Iowa right now. I read an article about it. It said it's because he's been under the radar. He's not getting too much public attention. He's not drawing too much criticism, but he's making real inroads among the population of Iowa. Lots and lots of evangelical born-agains in Iowa. But now here's the funny thing about him. And I don't know everything about this kind of deal, but he's a Seventh-day Adventist. And as a Seventh-day Adventist, that means that he is not exactly post-millennialist. Is it the pre or the post? Yeah, it's the post-millennialist. Or was it the premillennial? Yeah, he's not one of these premillennialist, dispensationalist, born again types who think that you have to force Jesus to come back now and nuke Israel so that the world will end and we'll all go to heaven or whatever ridiculous thing. He's got a different spin on it than that. Not exactly sure. I mean, like the Davidians, they were a break off of the Adventists, and they did believe that Israel, maybe that was why they broke off, is they very much believed that the foundation of Israel was a biblical thing, and it meant the end of the world was coming and all that crap. But anyway, the point is, he was on the Hugh Hewitt show, and he was asked about what to do about the war on terrorism and Iran and terror and whatever, and he went back to the Old Testament. Never even mind Muhammad, right? He goes back to the Old Testament to explain our Middle East foreign policy and what should be done about it. He's in second place right now among the Republicans. Read Raimondo about it today at antiwar.com. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I got Jim Loeb on the line. He is from LoebLog.com. Loeb, like your earlobe, LoebLog.com. And he's got a couple of very important pieces for us to look at here. In fact, that entire blog is very important. Nothing gets published there that's not very important. So please go and look at it. These two are AIPAC's Plan B and Cardin, the Iran deal, and the future of AIPAC's Plan B here. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing, Jim?
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing real good. I appreciate you joining us on the show here. So what is Plan B? Well, let me just set this up. We have enough Democratic senators now, not necessarily to filibuster, but definitely enough to prevent the overriding of the president's veto of the presumably soon-to-be-passed Republican resolution against the Iran deal. And so, therefore, its passage is secure now. It will be implemented. It's virtually certain and locked up now. So this is why the term Plan B here, that didn't work. So now what are they going to do, Jim?
Well, actually, there's kind of an update to my last posts on this, because Senator Cardin just said he will vote against the Iran deal. He said this in an op-ed that was published on the Washington Post website just about an hour ago, I think. And in his op-ed, he says he's going to introduce a legislation that I think is Plan B, although it's not entirely clear because he doesn't provide much in the way of detail. And this Plan B is essentially designed to, quote, strengthen, unquote, the JCPOA, that is the nuclear deal with between the P5 plus one and Iran, by adding some provisions which he would like to see enacted into law. And I think in this respect he is acting as a cat's paw for AIPAC. He laid out four provisions with respect to the legislation he intends to introduce. But they're not very specific, and he also said that that these provisions would be consistent with the administration's interpretation of the JCPOA. So until we actually see the details of that bill, we can't really know whether, in fact, such provisions will be consistent. But it does tend to confirm this op-ed that Cardin wants to introduce something that will probably be backed by AIPAC, probably drafted in part by AIPAC, that could still derail the deal, and particularly by strengthening hardliners in Iran who argue that the United States cannot be trusted and will not act in good faith.
Yeah. In the previous piece, you have here some draft legislation that somebody furnished you here. Do you think that this is different than what Cardin is going to be introducing? Or sounds like it's probably along the same lines, even down to the number of different hurdles they're going to introduce here, no?
Well, I think it will definitely overlap. My suspicion is that this legislation is still being negotiated, mm-hmm. because
it's an important taste of what direction they're going here, trying to figure out ways to sabotage the deal even once it's implemented.
Right. Essentially, what they want is legislation that they say will strengthen the JCPOA, but will actually probably include a number of poison pills, that is, provisions that would be unacceptable to Iran or to Washington's negotiating partners. But he lists four general points, but we don't know the specific provisions. We do know that some of the specific provisions that appeared in the draft that I published a few days ago would be poison pills. For example, providing the latest bunker busters and the means to deliver them to Israel, or immediately extending the Iran Sanctions Act. Iran has already said that would be unacceptable to them. So we do know, we have some idea of what would be, in fact, poison pills if it's included in this legislation, but he doesn't provide much in the way of detail. There are certainly hints that it may include provisions that would be poison pills, and undoubtedly AIPAC would be pushing him and whoever backs this bill, Republicans in particular, to include poison pills. The issue then will be, will they gather enough Democrats who are uncomfortable with the JCPOA, even though they ended up voting for it, or will end up voting for it, will they attract enough of those Democrats to create a veto-proof majority?
So, in other words, as far as those Democrats go, if politically they don't want to oppose the president on this, but they're sort of on the line, well, maybe we can get them to vote for these amendments. That way they can say they supported the deal, but they're actually supporting things that'll ruin the deal, that'll obviously force Iran out of the deal.
Well, it wouldn't be in the form of an amendment, because what the Congress will be voting on
probably next week is a
resolution. What they're suggesting is that there would be immediately after, or even at the same time, additional legislation designed, in their words, to strengthen the JCPOA, but actually may be designed to sabotage it.
And politically, that's smart, right? I mean, that sounds like exactly the kind of thing that they will be able to pressure some Democrats on the fence into. That'll be their compromise.
Right. For example, yesterday, both Senator Warner and Senator Booker of New Jersey announced that they will vote for, or they will vote against, the resolution that would reject the JCPOA. But then they, in their statements, they also said they would favor legislation that would do, for example, deliver the bunker busters. That's what Booker wanted. Mm-hmm. Or extend the Iran Sanctions Act. Warner included that in his statement. So these Democrats might be attracted to this legislation that Cardin is talking about. And it's significant that it's Cardin, because Cardin is the ranking Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. So he has influence. So the question is, what will be the details of this provision? Will there be poison pills? How will the White House react? Can the White House keep the Democrats in line? So the war is over this, over the JCPOA is not over. And remember also that the leader, supreme leader in Iran, Khamenei, announced yesterday that he wanted this to be debated by the Iranian parliament, or the Majlis. And hardliners in the Majlis, who are overrepresented in the Majlis, are going to make any effort by Congress now to pass additional legislation that could be interpreted as sanctions or as threatening military action by Israel or whatever. Those hardliners will use that in the debate in Iran. It's this kind of, what Cardin has done essentially will strengthen hardliners who will be arguing against ratification of the JCPOA by the Iranian parliament.
Yeah.
So if JCPOA is not a done deal, at least as far as this country is concerned, and probably, possibly also as far as Iran is concerned.
Hmm. Man. All right. Well, so to try to look on the bright side of it, with Booker and Warner, and says here Heitkamp, now that they've come out in favor, we're actually getting pretty close. How many votes are we away from the ability of the Democrats to even possibly filibuster the negative resolution?
Well, actually, it wouldn't be a filibuster because there is an agreement that this resolution would pass under normal or under regular order, and that means it has to be negotiated between the majority-minority leadership, and the minority leadership will probably say that since it is being done under regular order, that the resolution needs to pass by 60 votes. So technically, it wouldn't be a filibuster. I think there are now four outstanding Democrats who have not committed one way or the other. And I don't know. I think it's very difficult to predict. I think Senator Wyden from Oregon is the most likely to line up with the Republicans in opposition. And I think we need the side that wants the resolution, that wants the JCPOA needs three more votes. So it has to, I think, get three out of the four that remain uncommitted. And again, as I say, I think Wyden will oppose. I think a lot depends now on Blumenthal from Connecticut. I think he's probably the key swing vote. So, but I haven't done the math this morning because Cardin was still up in the air, and as I say, he just decided to vote no.
Yeah, that's really too bad about Wyden. He seems like a decent and honest enough guy that maybe he could be intellectually honest about this issue enough to come down on the right side of it, but I guess not.
Well, my understanding is that he's very tight with AIPAC and the lobby, but I personally have no great inside knowledge about it.
All right. Well, listen, I've already kept you a little bit over here, and sorry about that. Thanks very much for coming back on the show, Jim. Appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks, Scott.
All right, y'all. That's Jim Loeb. He's at loeblog.com. We'll be right back in just a sec. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson, Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the goddamn thing here, man. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Yeah, just a short segment. Did I say a short segment? That's not right. The other way around. With the H's there. Yeah, Jim Loeb. Hey, just catching up on the... Whatchacallit? You know, what do you call it? The numbers game. The whip count. Yeah. Well, you know what? I guess there's plenty of, I guess Jim covered all of that. That's what we're talking about. We talked about the Supreme Leader thing and the, Walter Pincus had this interesting thing in the Washington Post, fine print, a push to boost military support to Israel over the Iranian nuclear deal. And Obama's, letter to Gerald Nadler explaining America's enhanced support for Israel. Obama pointed out the, and here, I'm going to talk about the deal in just a second because you need to know the deal, dude. But Obama, in his letter to Nadler, pointed out the administration is holding talks with Israeli officials to extend for an additional decade the Bush administration's 10-year, $30 billion plan to pay for Israel's foreign military purchases of equipment and training, mostly from U.S. firms. The agreement was signed in 2007 and runs out in fiscal 2018. The new deal would, quote, cement for the next decade our unprecedented levels of military assistance to Israel, Obama said, quote, unquote, in the letter to Nadler. And here's what's great about this. Do you know about the Constitution of the United States of America? Do you know that in Article 1, Section 8, where Congress is delegated the authority to raise taxes to support armies, and to delegate those, appropriate those funds to the raising of armies, that they are banned by the Constitution from any appropriation of funds for the military being for more than 2 years at a time. Congress cannot pass a deal that says this is how much we're going to spend on the military over the next decade. Now, yeah, they have their plans and whatever, but any actual appropriation can only be for 2 years at the maximum. Why? Well, because the founders didn't want to create a military dictatorship. Not really. I mean, kind of, I guess, but it's a, you know, partial one. Was General Washington led the coup against the Articles of Confederation? Can't quite forget that. Richest man in the world at the time. Did you know that? Anyway. Congress is forbidden from appropriating money, from passing a law or resolution or whatever, appropriating money to the military of the United States of America for more than 2 years at a time. Oh, but doesn't say anything about appropriations for Israel's military for 10 years at a time. So, yes, there's nothing standing in the way of a new deal which would, quote, cement for the next decade our unprecedented levels of military assistance to Israel, where America picks up, they say, a fifth, so it must be a quarter or more of Israel's entire military budget. Current discussions involve raising the annual amount, which is at $3.1 billion a year, which at $3.1 billion a year is more than half of all U.S. foreign military sales support worldwide, to possibly $3.5 billion a year. At that level, it would almost equal 20% of Israel's entire defense budget. Yeah, see, they say a fifth. I say it must be a quarter or more. Another unique, because it's not just 3 point whatever, because there's all kinds of other appropriations, loan guarantees, and other kinds of programs that don't get counted in that $3 billion that we give them a year. So, there. Another unique element of the Israeli weapons purchase program is that up to 26.3% of the U.S. money can be spent for Israeli manufactured military equipment. Ironically, the U.S. promise of increased aid to Israel's defense budget comes as the Pentagon is facing budgetary pressures and Netanyahu's government is having an internal debate over efficiency reforms in the IDF.
I don't care about that so much. U.S. announced a $1.88 billion sale to Israel on May the 19th. Using the assistance money for bombs and tail kits for several types of precision-guided weapons. Included are the 50 BLU-113 5,000-pound bombs and special penetrating nose cones that are designed for use on deeply buried targets, such as Iran's Fordo uranium enrichment facility. So already giving them some bunker busters. I guess Congress just is debating giving them more. Beyond that annual $3.1 billion in foreign military sales money, the administration has been providing grant money for Israeli missile defense programs. All right, enough of this. Anyway, here's the thing, too. This is all because America is so sorry, Israel, for taking Iran's civilian safeguarded nuclear program and reducing it by 90%, by expanding inspections, by closing down all nuclear enrichment at the Fordo facility, by converting Iraq and Bushehr to make sure that they only produce waste that could never be used for nuclear weapons, for completely using up and getting rid of their entire stockpile of uranium so that they're basically only using as they enrich and enriching as they use and saving none of it. Oh, boo-hoo, we're so sorry that we took your pretended boy who cried wolf tears seriously for a minute there. We're so sorry we took your priority and worked this deal so that Iran's nuclear program has gone from safeguarded to safeguarded beyond any reason or historical precedent. Here's some bunker buster bombs. Here's billions of dollars of American taxpayer money so you can keep bulldozing and stealing family homes in the West Bank. I've been telling you for 10 years, quite correctly, on this show, that the Israelis are lying, have been lying, when they pretend to be concerned about an Iranian nuclear attack. They know Iran only has a civilian nuclear program. You can read it in the South Africa files, the leaked intelligence papers between Israel and South Africa, where the Israelis described to the South Africans, the Israeli intelligence in classified documents, described to South African intelligence in classified documents that, oh yeah, they have a civilian safeguarded nuclear program, and they haven't made any decision to make nuclear weapons. Yeah, we know. Liars the rest of the time when it's not secret and classified, you know, communication between intelligence agencies is a giant fake manufactured crisis from the get-go. And that's a big part of why all of the opposition that you hear in the media to the Iran nuclear deal starts with this. Israel says, when? Israel says, boo-hoo. Israel says, they'll give me a dollar if I say that this is a bad, bad deal and we should get a better deal. Israel, 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 Israel. The only person who in this entire debate has come up with a reason to pretend that this deal is against the interests of the American people is Ted Cruz, who had to break out his book of fairy tales to read to us about the simple A-bomb, fission bomb, EMP attack that's going to turn out all the lights. Oh, he narrowed it down to just the East Coast, you know, to make it more plausible. Yeah, Iran is going to somehow, with their now incredibly reduced nuclear program, they're going to use their black magic to create an atom bomb, and then they're going to float it across the Atlantic without anyone noticing, and then instead of nuking Washington, D.C., like, I don't know, 7 billion people on Earth would like to see, instead of that, they're going to shoot it into space with their magic rockets they don't have. And then their fission bomb is going to magically turn into a radiation-enhanced thermonuclear device that they'll set off in space. And then that'll cause an EMP which will short all circuits forever. And then we'll all just lay down and die. Uh-huh. But meanwhile, you know what's fun? You can read in The Atlantic where Benjamin Netanyahu and Ehud Barak, who at the time was the former, he's still the former prime minister, at that time was the defense minister of Israel in Netanyahu's government, and they both explained to Jeffrey Goldberg that they are not concerned about an Iranian first strike if Iran ever did get nukes. They're only concerned if Iran got nukes that some Israelis might stay in the U.S. after grad school instead of coming home again, and that Hamas might be emboldened to, I guess, defend themselves better. That's it. Read it in The Atlantic. Hey, y'all. Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. All right, well, this... not so much substance as business, but that's all right, man. I'm into it. Hope you don't mind. Our next guest is Scott Brown. He is the Scott Horton Show's latest and newest and greatest, for that matter, advertiser. Hey, why not? MasterSamuraiTech.com. MasterSamuraiTech.com. Leading appliance experts. Welcome to the show, Scott. How are you doing?
Thanks so much, Scott. Great to be here. Appreciate being on with you.
Well, very happy to have you here, and very happy to have you sponsoring the show and doing what you do. And I have to admit, I kind of, well, you know me with the blabbing and everything. I admitted to the audience a segment or two ago that I'm considering quitting this show and taking your classes. The problem is it's just not my talent, man, the technical type stuff. I mean,
I gotta
obviously
say,
I can do my breaks, but I'm not like, you know, a real engine guy.
You really, this is eminently learnable by anybody. Anybody can learn these technical things like reading schematics, basic electricity, how the new appliances work, and that's what we're really dealing with is all these computer-controlled appliances. Sounds real high-tech and mysterious, but anybody can learn it, and here's the big secret. There's a huge need for it because there's a big skill gap among appliance repair techs in America, uniquely in the U.S., and I think Canada as well, today, and that is guys who know how to troubleshoot. It's a very learnable skill. It's a teachable skill. In fact, that's what we do. We teach people how to think like real technicians, follow that logical cause and effect chain of thought to its conclusion and identifying the problem, measuring inputs and outputs. I mean, this is the essence of what technicians do. Techs can learn this stuff. And the problem is, and the opportunity this creates for people like you, although I got to say, Scott, what you do is phenomenally important. This is why another big reason we support your show. I love what you do. You're the voice of sanity and reason in a crazy world today. But it creates an opportunity for people who are looking to be self-employed, looking for a change in career, looking to do something interesting. And that opportunity exists because there is such a skill gap among appliance techs today. A lot of these guys out there been in the trade for 20, 30 years. They don't actually read schematics. They don't really troubleshoot. Things are done by pattern recognition. If this problem, replace that part. Well, the days of appliances when they were made with discrete mechanical parts, those are gone. And it was cheap to just try a part. Oh, that didn't fix it. Okay, I'm going to take that off and repackage that, and I'll try another part. You go broke doing that today with these modern electronic control boards. They're actually single-board computers that are running a lot of these appliances. It is eminently learnable. You don't have to know a lot of higher math. You just have to learn some things, and it's all the way we teach it is with a combination of written text, but as well as there's lots of screencasts, video screencasts where I'm actually showing you and explaining. There could be a video where I'm actually on a service call and I'm going back and forth between the schematic and then finding those circuits on the actual appliance, mm-hmm. or it's a screencast where I'm actually stepping through in a more teaching type mode where and showing how to do things like read schematics and basic electricity and series and parallel circuits and Ohm's law and all the stuff that every technician who calls himself a technician should know, but in fact probably 80 to 90% of the guys out there doing the trade today don't.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Whenever I hear you talking, you remind me kind of Jeff Tucker. You know, he likes to write these articles about, you know, all the fancy new kinds of toasters in the world. Whatever. And I know you're talking about bigger ticket items, but his point being, because of the miracle of capital investment, we have such progress and such changes going on in these kinds of appliances and that kind of deal. So it makes a lot of sense what you're saying, that there's a big gap that needs to be filled there, where the old refrigerator repairman and washing machine repairman, he needs to come and refresh his skills to keep up with the new technology. But at the same time, the ones who aren't, they're being replaced by the new young guys who are coming in and learning this stuff and are ready to work on the higher end devices. And then, of course, when we're talking about the higher end, type appliances, we're talking about the higher end fee paying customers for the repair on those devices too. So those appliances. So, seems like it makes pretty good sense to be in that business right now, Scott.
Well, and you mentioned something about younger guys coming in and replacing them. That's the big thing. There's not a lot of younger guys coming into the trade in any of the skilled trades. I mean, but especially appliance repair. There's a lot of reasons for that, a point of a whole topic for a whole nother discussion on it. But the average age of appliance techs in the U.S. is 55. Happens to be my age as well. But there's not a lot of young people coming into it. And the reasons are varied, you know, the whole government school business, and they're pushing the whole college mill, and you go get your degree in basket weaving and $80,000 in debt, and then maybe if you're lucky, you get a job at Foot Locker. Well, and you're not a lot of job satisfaction, or managing McDonald's or something. Why do that? I mean, meanwhile, what that does is it diverts away good talent from going into the skilled trades, and I'm specifically talking about appliance repair, but all of the skilled trades are in the same boat. And so you divert good talent from the skilled trades. And now, when was the last time anybody, finding a good electrician, good plumber, good appliance repair tech in particular, it's very difficult today because a lot of the kids who would have gone into that have been diverted and I think done a great disservice by the government school system. And so they've been diverted into the college mill and then on to be corporate, you know, cogs in the corporate mill instead of, and this is the other big thing.
Yeah, or just sitting on their parents' couch trying to figure out what to do at all, yeah.
But the other big thing with the skilled trades, great way to be self-employed. Fantastic opportunities in self-employed. So you learn the trade, maybe you apprentice for a little bit, or you go through some training like our training, you come up to speed real quickly, and then you get out there and you just start doing it on your own. If you are a young person and you've got that degree and it's not really doing you any good and you find yourself sitting on the couch at your parents' home, you're in a perfect situation. Learn a useful skill and then just start slowly doing service calls while you still have a place to live and you don't have a lot of living expenses. I see it as a great transition jumping off point.
Yeah.
And that's what you should use that situation as.
Hey, tell me this. I guess it must be different in the 50 states and this kind of thing, but typically what kind of licensing does this kind of work require?
Okay, great question. And there's really only two states that come to mind that are really kind of silly. I'm not sure about California, but two states in particular come to mind where they're really silly about this. Washington State, if you even go and remove a dishwasher from an under-counter dishwasher, two screws, right? Two screws underneath that counter, hold that dishwasher in. Well, if you're going to do any, according to the way it's written, if you're going to do anything to... It might be Oregon, actually. I'm sorry, it's Oregon. Washington State has another one. So Oregon, you remove those two screws to pull out the dishwasher. You need, guess what? You need a contractor's license. And you need to go 40 hours of training, something like that. It's very expensive training, very time-consuming. And it's all about house construction. Just because you need to remove two screws to remove a dishwasher or four screws to pull out a wall oven. If you're going to do it, because the law is written there, so if you're going to do anything to... where the appliance is affixed to permanent cabinetry in the home, you need a contractor's license. And then Washington State requires that you have some sort of, it's not actually an electrician's license, but it's some sort of specialized electrical training so you can learn about how power comes into the home and circuit breaker boxes and circuit breakers, which again has nothing to do with, well, it has something obviously to do with the appliance, but that's not what we're doing as appliance techs. We're inside the appliance. We're tracing down digital signals, looking at DC voltages for control voltages. We're also looking for AC voltages, but there's a lot of circuit troubleshooting going on. That's what we do. We're not chasing down circuit breakers and we're checking outlets to make sure that it's where you want to start. Check your outlet. Are you getting a good power supply? If you are, then you're going inside the box. That's what we call it, inside the appliance. That's where your troubleshooting goes. So it's kind of silly then that they require you to have this electrician's subset license. But other than that, maybe some states require that if you're going to install a gas appliance, that you would have some gas fitter's license. New Hampshire's like that. And that's only if you're going to do installations of gas appliances. Working on them, different deal. But other than that, there are no, electrical licensing, plumbing licensing. There is no state-sanctioned appliance repair technician's license. And I hope it never goes that way.
Yeah.
Because a license
and that was really the point
quality.
I was trying to get to there, too. That unlike, being an electrician or a plumber where, I guess, virtually all states, there's a ton of hurdles to jump through. In most cases here, you won't have that problem. Now, we got to take this break. We'll be right back, everybody. I want you to hear a little bit more from Scott Brown from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
I love Bitcoin, but there's just something incredibly satisfying about having real, fine silver in your pocket. That's why commodity discs are so neat. They're 1 ounce rounds of fine silver with a QR code on the back. Just grab your smartphone's QR reader, scan the coin, and you'll instantly get the silver spot price in Federal Reserve notes and Bitcoin. And if you donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show, he'll send you one. Learn more at facebook.com/commodity discs. Commoditydiscs.com.
All right, big Syria news coming up, y'all. Breaking news here in just a few. Right now, we're talking with Scott Brown, new advertiser on the show, Master Samurai Tech. And,
their deal is this. They teach you how to repair high-end, brand-new, high-tech appliances so that you can not just go and make money at a new job repairing appliances, but so that you can own your own business repairing appliances, and that's a big part of it. But so first on the repair part, I was hoping, Scott, you could kind of tell us a little bit more. You did mention a little bit some examples there. Tell us a little bit more about what people might expect if they sign up, what the classes are like, how many, the different kinds of things that you're going to be covering, that kind of deal. And then also I want to ask after that about the business training here. I mean, I guess you're not giving away an MBA, but you're teaching people how they can really do this themselves. No gimmick.
Right, show
for real.
Them, right. Showing them the stuff that we've learned in our 20-plus years of running the trade, how they can run a successful business themselves. We absolutely have a separate course on that. I just want to clarify one thing. Virtually all the appliances today, and I'm talking major kitchen and laundry appliances, low-end as well as high-end, are all using computer control boards. And this is all driven by our government, Department of Energy. Energy Star requirements is requiring manufacturers to micromanage their amount of water, in the case of wet appliances, and energy that all of the appliances are using. That's why they're using these control boards.
Oh, so no wonder for that gap in the market that you were talking about. It's a government distortion here. So it's like
exactly.
An arbitrage thing.
It's an artificial exactly. Totally, precisely. So we have this artificial creation. So there are a whole strata of appliances that are really our throwaway items, and they're that because the cost to repair them quickly runs close to the cost of replacement. And that's the big enemy in appliance repair. That's precisely, though, why you want to focus on higher-end appliances, the ones that are too expensive to just throw out, and you want, and because that you want to be able to fix them for a reasonable repair fee, one that is fair for you and fair for the customer. And so, there is that bifurcation. And that some of that comes with skill and experience in learning that, learning the offerings of the industry, and that's you'll learn that quickly. We teach a lot of that too. Mostly what we teach though in our course and our technical training, so it's all online. It's not like we wait for a class to form. And the fact that it's online means several things. One, that it's always up to date, so it's comprehensive because it's easy to for us to update things as new technologies come out, as new models come out that are implemented. And because all the technology used in appliances is not like they make up new technology for it. They're basically using technology that's already been out there in other applications. They just incorporate it into the appliance world, and they're applying it to appliances. So, but the techs who work in the trade need to learn that technology in order to troubleshoot. So we're teaching you right up to date the newest technologies that are applied and used in the appliance industry today, the variable frequency drive systems and all the rest. And we go into all of that in detail. And we do this. It's all an online training. So that means it's also the other benefit of that is accessible to you whenever you are ready to sit down and spend some time learning. So you'll go through maybe each day if you're disciplined and do a lesson or two. And then at the end of each lesson, I should back up a second. Each lesson is composed of, I think I mentioned, of text and videos or screencasts. At the end of that lesson, you're going to have a quiz, the varying length, and a student has to get 100%. You have to score 100% on the quiz. You get three attempts to score 100%. If after three attempts you're still not getting your 100%, then we talk with you. So there's a human interactive component to the training. We have student forums. People communicate with us through the contact form. We can do webinars in the case of people really aren't getting it. And we have people with all kinds of different abilities. Some people need a lot more help than others. Some people just are quick on the uptake and they get it. And there's no predicting who is what, and doesn't matter. What matters is persistence, sticking with it. And if you do that, you will get it because we will make sure you get it. And that's the whole point of the course, is for you to master the material and not just score a grade. We want to make sure that when you go out there, when you get the certification from us, that you know what you're doing and you're going to have confidence in what you're doing. And we're going to interact with the student as much as they need to make sure that they've mastered the material. They're going to continue on the lesson in like manner. So at the end of each lessons are grouped into modules. And, for example, basic electricity and the fundamentals of appliance repair course, which teaches all of the basic skills that every technician should have, all the electrical skills, part skills, gas, motors, et cetera. At the end of each module, there's an exam that a student has to score 90% on, and you get two attempts. And, again, if they use up their two attempts and they get blocked, then we talk with that student. What can we do to help them understand? What extra do they need? Do they need to just be reset at the beginning of the module? No extra charge for any of this. The tuition you pay is good for as much work as you need to get through the course, and you maintain access in the course. Once a student, always a student. You're a student for life. You have access to that course for life, even the new stuff that we add to it. You work your way on through, and in the case of the fundamentals, you get all the way through after the motors modules, which is the last one, and then you have a final exam. Final exam is it's almost 100 questions, but it's not just true-false multiple choice like the other quizzes and module exams are. There's a lot of open answer questions in there, too, so I have to grade those myself. And students need to get 90% on that, and they get one attempt. And if they're not getting it, again, the whole conference thing, and we can do webinars and things, go over the exam results, because I want to make sure that everybody who gets the certification from the Fundamentals of Appliance Repair course really knows what they're doing. And it's not just like this meaningless piece of paper, so it's kind of a quality control check. But it's also, sure, if your people are doing this, they really want to learn this stuff, and they're going to. We also have a refrigerators course. It's structured similarly, and an advanced schematic analysis and troubleshooting course where we go into advanced troubleshooting topics, get into weird situations, open neutrals and things like that. But there are also a number of labs where there's no lesson per se. Here's a link to a tech sheet. Here's the service manual. And then I ask them a bunch of questions about it. It's exactly what a real tech would do in real life. Get the tech sheet, get the schematic, and then figure out what's wrong based on certain scenarios. Do your load analysis, figure out a troubleshooting plan, and then go forth and conquer. So, those are our technical courses. We've also got a professional development course that focuses on the soft skills. And soft skills are kind of ironically named because, you know, the technical skills are called the hard skills. The people skills are called the soft skills. It's actually, in terms of difficulty, the technical skills are much easier to learn than the soft skills. You can learn the technical skills in just a few weeks or months. It can take you a lifetime to learn the soft skills. But they're called soft skills because they deal with people. And we have a course that just deals with just that. And then we have our business course that teaches you how to set up, run, and operate your own successful appliance repair business. We offer all of these in a package, too. So fundamentals, refrigerators, advanced schematics, the business course also includes a lot of soft skills on its own. And that's offered as a bundle. So,
all right. Now, what kind of pricing are we talking about for all this stuff?
Okay, so the...
Oh, and keep in mind that we're almost out of time.
Okay, so Fundamentals of Appliance Repair course, $495. Again, you can get a 10% discount off the tuition if you use the coupon code Scott Horton on the enroll page over at mastersamuraitech.com. The business course bundle, which includes all the courses that I mentioned before, runs a little over $1,000, all those courses put together. And it's, again, 10% discount coupon code applies. So the business course is, $1,320. And that's all of the technical courses plus the operating a profitable appliance repair business course, and getting that at half price as part of that bundle price. Coupon codes apply to all of our course and course bundles.
Yep. And now listen, I mean, I just don't think that there's any question that all of that sounds, you know, to me, very reasonable prices for anyone who's serious about this and for the amount of return that they're going to get from the skills acquired here. That's got to be worth it. And then, so now tell them again, what's the promo code? Cause I've noticed one thing that happens with the promo codes is sometimes they're Scott. Sometimes they're Scott Horton. Sometimes they're Scott Horton Show. Sometimes it matters if they're caps or not. And nobody can ever remember which is the right one they're supposed to use and that kind of thing.
Yeah, the promo code is simple. It's just Scott Horton. No spaces. Don't put any spaces. So it's all one word, Scott Horton. And it doesn't matter if it's uppercase or lowercase. And that's going to get you 10% off the tuition for whichever course or course bundle that you select on the enroll page over at Master Samurai Tech. The way to get around when you're on there is to go look at the main menu, and you'll see the enroll page right up there. There's also a sample course that you can take for free and just take it for a test ride and see what the online learning experience is like and see if it's right for you.
Yeah, that's a great idea there, too, to take the sample course. Well, I've gotten a couple of emails from people saying, oh, man, this is really great. I'm looking into this. This is what I've been looking for. And I think down at Ron Paul's birthday party, somebody mentioned that they were going to take the free course there to learn about it. So I don't know how much business I'm sending your way, but I sure hope that this helps. And I sure hope that you guys, I mean, obviously you can tell this guy, Scott Brown, he's a straight shooter. He obviously knows exactly what he's talking about and how to teach it. He's been doing this for decades. The website is mastersamuraitech.com. Get involved, learn some things, make some money. Thanks very much, Scott.
That's it. Thanks so much for having me on, Scott. Great talking with you.
Appreciate it. Thanks again.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, y'all. Welcome back. So listen, this show doesn't typically spend too much time interviewing advertisers unless it's, you know, Phil Giraldi, you know, who's a group, the Council for the National Interest, or Jacob Hornberger, or something like that. The infomercial type stuff. I don't do that very often, but you know what? I should do it more. I mean, even when I interview Mike Swanson about economics, it's really more of an interview. It's not just, you know, shilling for his investment advice, although I should do more of that. I'm proud to, you know, whatever. Ain't no shame in it. It's not like I'm pimping myself out to Chase Bank or something. So, yeah, man, Master Samurai Tech. If you're looking for work and you're tired of being somebody else's employee, I mean, I don't know, man. This sounds really great to me. And, yeah. If I wasn't busy doing this, I might just do that. All right. Master Samurai Tech. Now, here's the breaking news. Where the hell did it go? Come here, news. Russia. According to Reuters, Russia. In fact, to be more specific, Vladimir Putin, President of Russia, has said that Syria's Assad is ready to share power. Vladivostok. Russian President Vladimir Putin said on Friday that Syrian President Bashar al-Assad is ready to hold snap parliamentary elections and could share power with a, quote, healthy opposition. Russia, along with Iran, has been Assad's principal international ally in a war that has raged in Syria for 4.5 years and has claimed 250,000 lives. Moscow has made clear it does not want to see Assad toppled and has seized on gains made by Islamic State in Syria and Iraq to urge his foreign foes, including the U.S. and Saudi, to work with Damascus to combat the common enemy. Quote, "We really want to create some kind of an international coalition to fight terrorism and extremism," Putin told journalists on the sidelines of the Eastern Economic Forum in Vladivostok, saying he had spoken to U.S. President Barack Obama on the matter. "We are also working with our partners in Syria. In general, the understanding is that this uniting of efforts in fighting terrorism should go in parallel to some political process in Syria itself," Putin said. And the Syrian president agrees with that, all the way down to holding early elections, let's say parliamentary ones, establishing contacts with the so-called healthy opposition, bringing them into governing, he said. Moscow wants the U.S.-led coalition carrying out airstrikes on Islamic State positions to coordinate with the Syrian and Iraqi armies and moderate anti-Assad rebel groups on the ground. Really? That's what he said? The moderate anti-Assad groups? I guess he's saying he wants America to take control of them and turn them just against the Islamic State. And what about al-Nusra? I haven't read about al-Nusra in here yet, but anyway. You know, remember a couple years ago, it was 2 years ago, when Vladimir Putin dared, dared to call John Kerry a liar. And I know what you're saying. You're saying, yeah, but John Kerry lies all the time. Which lie was he referring to? What's the big deal? And hey, you're a foreigner. You can't talk about my fairy godmother that way. That's my government, and I love it, even if it's John Kerry, you mean old Putin. But anyway, which John Kerry lie were you referring to there? And the John Kerry lie was testimony before John McCain's committee in the Imperial Senate, where McCain and Kerry decided that they would agree and forge a consensus there for us all that the vast majority of the rebellion in Syria is all very moderate. And whatever jihadists are very, very small and negligible part of what's going on there. Now, that was laughed out of court by everybody who knew anything about it at the time back 2 years ago. But, of course, the mainstream media, I don't know if they parroted it or just ignored it or what, didn't give it that much play. But then Vladimir Putin came out and said, well, you're a liar. He didn't say, hey, that's a lie. He said, you're a liar for telling that lie. You lying liar? That's not true at all. And then, of course, TV, just like the F the EU quote from Victoria Nuland, they focus on the one word. Somebody called somebody a name. Somebody used a bad word. I mean, they completely dropped the context. What was it that Putin was saying was the lie? He was saying it was a lie that the al-Nusra Front is no big deal. That's what he was saying was a lie. And he was telling the truth. And that's the way it's been. I mean, I know this sounds crazy, especially like if, one of my listeners said, hey, Dad, come in the room and listen to this for a minute. This guy on the radio is saying that Putin wants to help the secular fascist government of Syria fight terrorism, and that America and its allies, Turkey and Israel and Saudi and Qatar and Kuwait, are the ones backing the terrorists. Refusing to go along and negotiate with Putin. Now, yes, it's true we're bombing the Islamic State, but at the same time, we're helping the Turks back al-Nusra. Even the Brookings Institution guy admits that, says there's a joint U.S.-Saudi room, he calls it, in Turkey, where the U.S. and Saudi are operating, that is the CIA and Saudi intelligence, are operating the new Army of Conquest, which is what? The al-Nusra Front and their allies in Arar al-Sham. That's the same damn thing. Which is all the same damn thing as the Islamic State, too. Putin is leading the anti-terrorist coalition. Obama is leading the Al-Qaeda coalition here. And you know what? I guess if your dad's right-wing enough, maybe that would sound, good. Okay, yeah, that makes sense, because Obama's a traitor and a Muslim and a whatever. No, it's because he's a Likudnik. That's what it is. It's not because he's a Kenyan secret service agent or whatever, loyal to Mohammed and the jihad. It's because he's an American imperialist. And just like Ronald Reagan before him, he's using the bin Ladenite head-chopping suicide bombing terrorists to carry out Saudi interests. That's basically the deal. And having the Turks and the Israelis, of course, have wanted to get rid of Assad for a long time. The Israelis a lot longer than the Turks, I guess. So now this is their chance. And as we've covered on this show, in the slowest motion train wreck of all slow motion train wrecks, for 4 years straight now, since the dawn of the Arab Spring, U.S. and Saudi are hijacking this thing in Syria. They're using it to go ahead and implement the Clean Break Plan or the Yanan Plan to smash the Baathist, secularist, fascist dictatorship in Syria at any cost. And, I know it sounds crazy, so that's why I like to keep headlines like this around from the Daily Beast, which is just Newsweek. David Petraeus, King David Petraeus, Saint David Petraeus. use Al-Qaeda fighters to beat ISIS. That's the headline at the Daily Beast, okay? Use Al-Qaeda fighters to beat ISIS. And in fact, here's the thing about this article. It's co-authored by the great Nancy Youssef. And now that I think about it, I think there's some really good quotes in here that you might like to hear. You gotta spell those here's differently so it doesn't sound too redundant to say it that way. We'll be right back after this. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. If this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, guys, welcome back. All right, I can't help it. I got to play again. Oh, there's so many different ones. If America's at war with Al-Qaeda, and there's a massive sectarian war in the Middle East, on one side led by Tehran, on the Shiite side, the side America backed in the Iraq War for 8 years, Iraq War II. And then on the other side, it's backed by our so-called ally, Saudi, but really by, I mean, the war is being funded by them, but it's being fought by a bunch of bin Ladenite terrorists. Which side should America be on in that? And yes, granting the argument that America should be at war with anybody at all, and granting the understanding that this is all George W. Bush's fault. There was no sectarian war until the overthrow of Iraq, and then the continued occupation of Iraq, and America taking the Shia side in the civil war against the Sunnis of Baghdad and the rest of the country. But anyway, so, come on. If Scott Horton is really sitting here saying that America's backing the bin Ladenite side against the Shiite side that Bush backed in the Iraq War too, then there's got to be an answer for why that is, right?
If we have to choose the lesser of evils here, the lesser evil is the Sunnis over the Shiites. It's an evil, believe me, it's a terrible evil. Again, they've just taken out 1,700 former Iraqi soldiers and shot them in a field. But who are they fighting against? They're fighting against the proxy with Iran that's complicit in the murder of 160,000 people in Syria. You can just, you know, do the math. And again, one side is armed with suicide bombers and rockets, the other side has access to military nuclear capabilities. So from Israel's perspective, if there's got to be an evil that's going to prevail, you know, let the Sunni evil prevail.
All right. And now, first of all, of course, everyone knows that it's a damn lie that Iran has any military nuclear technology at all. And for those of you who constantly use the term begging the question when someone raises a question, this is question begging right here. Oh, well, we got to support the bin Ladenites in the Civil War because look how many people have died in the Civil War since we've been backing the bin Ladenite side this whole time. And then let's place all the casualties not on the foreign countries who have intervened here to do a regime change in Syria by sending in the bin Ladenite stormtroopers. No, let's blame the government that is resisting them for every single one of the casualties. Just like they're hitting you over the head all day long with the pictures of the dead toddler on the beach. He's a baby. He's one or two or something. And they go, look, a baby. Are you upset? Good. Then let us have a war. But we're supposed to know a little bit better than that by now, I think. And if you look, you see that the baby and his family were fleeing from Kobani, meaning they're Kurds, the ones the Americans had been fighting for and just betrayed for the Turks. You let us use your air base in Turkey, we'll let you bomb all the Kurds you want, America told the Turks, who are backing al-Nusra, that is al-Qaeda in Syria. And have been. And 2 years ago used them and a false flag chemical attack in order to try to get us to bomb Damascus. Which almost worked. Yeah, and then, by the way, and this always gets left out, well, not always by me, but many people leave this out. The vast majority of the population of Syria supports their fascist totalitarian dictatorship. How do you like that? And you know why? Because the guy's got a clean-shaven chin and a three-piece suit. That's why. Because he's an Alawite, but he doesn't force Alawitism on everyone, or whatever the hell you call it. He leads a secular fascist government, which is better than a bin Ladenite revolutionary head-chopping suicide bombing one. Ask the people of Mosul and Raqqa, they'll tell you. And that is a bet that the majority of the Sunnis of Syria have made, along with virtually all of the Kurds, the Druze, the Shia, and the Alawites as well. And all the different kinds of Christians, what you call them? Chaldean and Maronite Christians. I don't know if they have Assyrian, I guess Assyrians too. They all side with the dictatorship because it's protecting them from a head chopping. Doesn't mean they like Assad. Nobody likes Assad. But it means they like their army the same way you like your army. I mean, typical American. Somebody attacks you, you rally around your army. What would you do if, I don't know, the Saudis sent some terrorists to America to kill 3,000 of your countrymen? You might really lash out. You might miss and attack a couple of other countries. But you might love the military more than ever before in your whole life long, right? If that happened here in America, well, that's how the people of Syria feel. They're rallying around their George W. Bush to protect them from the bin Ladenites. Anyway, back to the Daily Beast, which again is just Newsweek. It's as official mainstream media in America can possibly get. From August the 31st, 2015, same song they've been singing for 4.5 years straight now. Petraeus, use Al-Qaeda fighters to beat ISIS. To take down this, oh, and this is by Shane Harris. He has, I think, conservative credentials as a kind of right-leaning reporter. And the heroic Nancy Youssef, who just does great journalism. I don't think she's really got a political ideology that applies to her journalism anyway. I wouldn't say the same for him necessarily. But the fact that her name is on this is all you need to know if you ask me. Petraeus, use Al-Qaeda fighters to beat ISIS. To take down the so-called Islamic State in Syria, the influential former head of the CIA and former general who lost the Iraq and Afghan wars, wants to co-opt jihadists from America's arch foe. Members of Al-Qaeda's branch in Syria have a surprising advocate in the corridors of American power, retired Army General and former CIA Director David Petraeus. The former commander of U.S. forces in Iraq and Afghanistan has been quietly urging U.S. officials to consider using so-called moderate members of Al-Qaeda's Nusra Front to fight ISIS in Syria. Even though we all know their target is Assad, always has been. Four sources familiar with the conversations, including one person who spoke to Petraeus directly, told the Daily Beast. The heart of the idea stems from Petraeus' experience in Iraq in 07, when as part of a broader strategy to defeat an Islamist insurgency, the Sunni-based insurgency there, the U.S. persuaded Sunni militias to stop fighting with Al-Qaeda and to work with the U.S. military instead. The tactic worked, at least temporarily, but Al-Qaeda in Iraq was later reborn as the Islamic State and has become and Al-Nusra and has become the sworn enemy of its parent organization. Now Petraeus is returning to his old play, advocating a strategy of co-opting rank and file members of Al-Nusra, particularly those who don't necessarily share all of Al-Qaeda's Islamist philosophy. However, Petraeus' play, if executed, could be enormously controversial. The American war on terrorism began with an Al-Qaeda attack on 9/11, of course. The idea that the U.S. would 14 years later work with elements of Al-Qaeda's Syrian branch was an irony too much to stomach for most U.S. officials interviewed by the Daily Beast. Isn't that the most important statement in this entire article? They're tattletaling on Petraeus is what they're doing. That's what this article is. They found Petraeus's notion politically toxic, near impossible to execute, and strategically risky. It would also face enormous legal and security obstacles. In 2012, the Obama administration designated al-Nusra a foreign terrorist organization. And last year, the president ordered airstrikes on al-Nusra positions, housing members of the so-called, by the United States, Khorasan Group, an al-Qaeda cadre that was trying to recruit jihadists with Western passports to smuggle bombs onto civilian airliners, they claimed. Yet Petraeus and his plan cannot be written off. He still wields considerable influence with U.S. officials, lawmakers, and foreign leaders. The fact that he feels comfortable recruiting defectors from an organization that has declared war on the United States underscores the tenuous nature of the Obama administration's strategy to fight the Islamic State, which numerous observers have said is floundering in search of a viable ground force. According to those familiar with Petraeus' thinking, he advocates trying to cleave off less extreme al-Nusra fighters who are battling the Islamic State in Syria, but who join with al-Nusra because of their shared goal of overthrowing Assad. Oh, man, I'm out of time. That's not fair, because there's more good, great quotes in here, man. You got to read this thing. It's at the Daily Beast. Petraeus, use al-Qaeda fighters to beat ISIS. I meant to read more and go on and on less, but sorry.